Again, apparently Brian had the hot topic.
Yeah, I didn't know my
contractor came in the building and set off.
Yeah, I didn't know my testimony was going to be that fiery. Mayor and Assembly members, I'm Brian Lynch, representing Rivers Without Borders and Salmon Beyond Borders. I want to present just a brief overview of the transboundary workshop that was held last Thursday in Juneau. Like I said, you have some handouts from that meeting. Now, this was presented at the Citizens Advisory Group meeting that was promised in October of last year after the signing of the Statement of Cooperation and the Memorandum of Understanding with BC. However, that really wasn't what it was. A lot of us were kind of baffled just exactly what this meeting was. While invitations were sent out, no teleconferencing opportunities were presented, and Lieutenant Governor Malott, ironically, was not even there for most of the meeting. Officials in attendance were Albert Kukash, who is a policy and program specialist who took Barbara Blake's place, Larry Hardig, the DEC commissioner who ran the meeting, David Rogers, ADF&G Habitat Division Director, Ed Fogles, the DNR Deputy Commissioner, Kyle Mosell, the Large Mine Project Manager, Terry Lomax, who is a DEC Environmental Program Manager, who will be leading the Water Quality Monitoring Program over the next 2 years, also Representative Dan Cortez was also there for most of the meeting. People in attendance included tribal representatives, a couple of seafood industry reps, NGOs, but no community, borough, or city reps. David Rogers opened the meeting with a brief overview of what we're going to cover, what was covered. Kyle Mosell presented the communications plan and reciprocal procedures. The communications plan, much of this is already available and seems partly to convince people of the success of the SOC, the Statement of Cooperation. We're not really sure how this really goes toward protecting Alaska or how it changes or actually improves the current situation. The reciprocal procedures is basically codify specific procedures mentioned in the SOC. While this is a good thing, a good thing to do, much of this is already happening. It basically just describes the information flow between agencies. There's no public or tribal role. It forces Alaska to literally participate in a process controlled by British Columbia. It doesn't really protect Alaska and can't do anything about existing or already approved mines. In fact, the second Tulsiqua Chief Mine Environmental Risk Assessment is scheduled to be out very soon, but there will be no formal review process, although we as Rivers Without Borders are going to review and comment on that plan. The state is also planning to review and comment on it. There's no real official comment period allowed on this. It's a final. So participating in BC's procedures really isn't doing us much good. And okay, the monitoring plan, it is a start, and it's going to be conducted by the state over the next couple of years. However, much more needs to be done, and I want you to note the note on that plan. It says, this preliminary draft program description and two-year work plan are not approved or funded by Alaska or British Columbia. Approval of this preliminary draft does not indicate funding approval. That's one of the big problems with this. That's why we need federal intervention, possibly International Joint Commission reference, to have access to both federal funds and international funds. Water quality monitoring is expensive and needs to be long-term. The tribes are providing some funding and conducting some monitoring, but the lack of funding is one very basic reason for requesting, as I said, federal and IJC intervention on this issue. Senator Murkowski currently is looking for water quality monitoring cost estimates so she can insert a line item into the congressional budget request. Two questions and issues that were brought up several times and were the obvious, if you will, universal concerns were, one, how do British Columbia and the state of Alaska plan to finance a comprehensive monitoring and enforcement program in the transboundary watersheds? Will the federal governments be involved, and if so, how, as I previously stated? Secondly, what is the state of Alaska doing to secure adequate financial assurances, given that mine reclamation liabilities in British Columbia are underestimated and most mine operators are not required to provide full funding for the reclamation obligations that are estimated? That's just reclamation. That's not money that covers any sort of disaster like Mount Polly. That's completely out there. we have to have federal, as I've mentioned before, and you very well know, we have to have federal intervention to do anything, to have any sort of enforceable regulations or financial assurances from Canada or BC that people, cities like Petersburg can be made whole for any kind of damages. The state literally had no answer for either of these questions. There are several comments requesting that the state explicitly request federal IJC engagement, which they haven't done up to this point. Lieutenant Governor Mrlot did come back late in the meeting during the latter part of the Q&A period. He heard some of the comments critical of the state's lack of explicit asks of the feds. He was, shall I say, visibly upset at some of what was said, possibly somewhat prompted by me. He delivered an angry statement that frankly caught most of us by surprise, in which he stated that he had asked for federal engagement several times, which really hasn't been done. He also said, and I'm paraphrasing, that you don't ask for something from the feds unless you know what the answer will be. The feds in this case are not going to come out and say no outright. And it also isn't a criminal court where you saying is a lawyer doesn't ask a question unless he knows what the answer is going to be. That's not what we're dealing with here. The importance of a federal IJC involvement, I want to note here that in Montana, we've been in contact with folks who have been involved with BC on the Kootenai and Elk River systems. Several years ago, there was an IJC reference on the Kootenai, which resulted in a halt to coal mining in BC on that system. There was an MOU SOC developed for the Elks, similar to what we have in Alaska, and are now seeing serious pollution problems, particularly from selenium, which is resulting in deformed fish in that system. So that definitely speaks to the need for a full federal or IJC intervention. Now, there are other ways you can go rather than IJC if you want to, but the IJC is going to give you a much better view of what the cumulative effects of the mining in the TBR transboundary river systems. In closing, I would have respectfully request that the borough send another letter to Lieutenant Governor Mrlot requesting that he explicitly ask for federal engagement of this issue, similar to the ones you already sent. Anyway, thank you, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right, any questions? Go ahead, Kurt.
I was just thinking, you know, what does Byron know about the federal government that we don't know right now why they're not interested in playing with us? It seems obvious that, you know, that a lot of livelihoods are, you know, going to be at stake here if something goes sideways. Yeah. What's his reluctance to get them involved?
Mayor, Member Wolhuter, that's the $64 million question. I think we know why he might be doing this. I don't really want to state it, but I don't think he knows anymore. And considering that our congressional delegation has asked for this, that wants the state to ask because they feel that the State Department is very reluctant or resistant to doing anything without the state of Alaska behind what our congressional delegation is asking for. One of the things that we've heard at other meetings and hearings is the concern for federal overreach. I find that somewhat amusing considering that each one of our members of our delegation have accused various agencies, federal agencies, of federal overreach at one time or another, but they are united in wanting federal intervention in this issue. So that's not what it is. Anyway, I don't think he knows any more than the rest of us. It's just, you know, there's something in there that, you know, I don't want to say for sure because I don't know what's going on, you know.
Did you have a question too, Bob?
I've got two of them. The one, we talked earlier about water quality monitoring, and I totally agree with you. It needs to be long-term, and it needs to have funding associated with it. But one of the things I think we got right now is that since we don't have a plan in place, it's obviously really hard to get our federal delegation, you know, to go up on the Hill and to put it either in the appropriations bill or to put it in a special bill. How do we turn the folks in the state around so we can have a plan in hand that we can actually go forward, I guess is the first question.
Answer that question, I don't know, because we've done about everything we can do so far to instill in the state of Alaska to do exactly that. We're frustrated. You know, we feel like we're just, I feel like, we've been spinning our wheels here, and I really don't fully understand it. I really don't. You know, we're all just basically baffled, and even that has been stated by some of our congressional delegation that they're kind of baffled about it too. You know, so anyway, so I don't have a good answer for you.
And under the joint agreement, and it's quite lengthy, if I read that correctly, there is funding at the federal level that, that they get each year that possibly could be used for part of it. I guess I don't understand the reluctance of our state to go back, as to get federal intervention so we could at least hold on to some of that money.
Yeah. I don't understand that either. There was a representative from the EPA there from Region 10, and they have done some, water quality monitoring, looking at this, and they basically their methodologies are similar to what the state would use, or even Canada would use, for that matter, in this. But I know Senator Murkowski is looking for input on projects on the cost of of long-term monitoring projects, so it can be a line item can be inserted in the congressional budget. So I know she is looking for that, and they are looking for it, and we're going to try to provide some of that information to her. So,
any other questions? Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Are there any other visitors' views unrelated to the agenda? Seeing none, the next item on the agenda is board, commission, and committee reports, and we have Richard Burke here to talk about the Planning Commission airport parking report.
Hello, I'm Richard Burke, and I am representing the Planning and Zoning Commission on this issue. I sent a report, and that pretty much explains the whole gist of it. Basically, the Planning and Zoning Commission is requesting the borough acquire a lease for the property across the street from the Alaska Airlines Terminal for the purpose of constructing an additional long-term parking area. There's still a lot of details that need to be worked out. How are we going to pay for this, and how are we going to administer it? But at this point, there's nothing else that planning and zoning really has the power to do until we have the blessing from the assembly and we have this lease.
Anybody have any questions?
So how many spots do we have available at the parking right now?
We currently have 35 long-term spots.
35 long. And does that count the spot now toward the end, the corner?
That does not count the part in the triangle where those are like short term, like mm-hmm. that would be acceptable in the summertime.
And that was one thing that I was made aware of recently, was that there actually is overflow parking down toward the corner that road kind of wraps around the end of the air, the runway there. I had no idea that was overflow parking. Perhaps we could just have some signage made up that kind of highlighted that it would be a spot, because I've heard of folks who, will run back their vehicles back to their house and take a taxi back up. But if the community knew that was overflow parking, not specifically for another use.
Planning and zoning's concerned that that's too close to the airport fence. Okay. If FAA decided to start enforcing our close parking to the airport facility, we could suddenly have no parking at all at the airport. And parking across the street, we believe it would be far enough away, whereas the overflow parking is right next to the fence.
Okay, thank you.
Did you? Go ahead.
Is there a reason that planning and zoning chose to go across the street rather than to take that current area and expand it?
Are you talking about the triangle?
The triangle. If you could change that whole flow there, I think you could get, at least, I don't know how many, but a few. a few additional spaces.
That area is currently being used for a snow dump in the wintertime, and we still do have parking issues up there in the wintertime. At the time of year, it's easier to find parking in the summer because the snow dump area isn't enforced.
Could that snow dump area be changed? Did you look at that?
I'm not really sure.
I was going to say to your comment, Eric, about the parking, I think some of that's intended for the private plane users as well, and it's problematic in the winter. If you leave your car there for a few days, you can have some trouble getting in and out.
It's also a steep, from what I remember, a steep ramp up onto the road.
Was PNC's intention that the parking be long-term parking or short-term parking?
Long-term parking. But its proximity to the Alaska Airlines terminal would also work for short-term when you're dropping folks off and stuff if that fills up.
Are there any other questions?
Is there any way we could do a traffic study before we could really commit to leasing any property? I mean, is there a real need for that? Is what I'm getting at, I suppose. I mean, do they see more traffic in and out of here with jets that you might see more travel, or is it just kind of, it'd be a nice idea for $500,000 to $1 million to fill in a parking lot for some long-term parent?
I don't think it'll cost that much.
Have we done any studies?
I know the state has been counting cars in mm-hmm. the last few weeks. We've seen the rubber things across the road. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they would be happy to share their numbers.
So I guess what I'm asking, planning and zoning, is there any way you guys could find out exactly how much it's going to cost before we commit to doing anything? Rough numbers.
I already have provided rough numbers.
Which is what?
It was $55,000 to $65,000, and that came from Reed Brothers Construction.
And that provides how many parking spots?
An additional 35.
35, okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There are no items filed for consent agenda. And we have, under report of other officers, the U.S. Forest Service Petersburg District update. And I believe we have a couple folks here from the Forest Service.
Thank you. My name is Dave Zimmerman, the district ranger here in Petersburg. I brought with me Tom Parker, our resource staff, that we'd like to have just a few moments of your time to just explain what the Petersburg Ranger District is going to be actually doing on the district and on the island, and specifically. We've decided about a year ago to do these little kind of horse and pony shows, if you will, to you folks here, to PIA, CAKE, to give everybody an idea of just what's going on. We haven't had a dialogue in a long time, so I'm trying to get that started again. I think I'll start, Tom. I'll put you on the spot, if you will. Tom has different resources, and he'll explain real briefly some of the work that he'll be doing. Tom?
Hello, Assembly. My name's Tom Parker. I am the resource staff here in Petersburg. I'll just kind of go down the line of the group of people that I have. First of all, our hydrology folks are going to be working out on the South Fork, out on QU Island, doing stream restoration. We previously have done some work out there in the past on the Kadaik stream system. And that's essentially just putting some woody debris back in the streams, trying to improve habitat. Going down to fisheries, Mr. Castro and crew, next year we'll be working on the Mitchell Creek Fish Pass over at Tonka, South Lindenberg Peninsula. And that'll be a complete reconstruction of that fish pass. It was scheduled for this year, but some things fell through, and we're getting our ducks lined up for next year. Our silviculture group, we've got 1,000 acres of thinning that we're currently doing over on QU Island. We had 100 acres that will be hopefully closed out this week over at Tonka. Most of our thinning nowadays isn't just straight thinning for trees. We do a lot of wildlife corridors and leaf strips and different things to promote more vegetation in some areas and less in others. We are doing currently going on, Richard Burke just left, but we are doing a pretty extensive road work right now over at Portage Bay. Most people that are familiar with the area. There's been a large washout that is being taken care of, hopefully in the next week or two. Reed Brothers are out there. We're reopening pretty much a vast majority of the existing road system over there with blading, brushing, and some ditching. We have lots of continuing environmental education going on here in Petersburg as well as CAKE. We have a CAKE Fish and Derby on the 1st.
First of
July over at CAKE. So in a nutshell, the kind of the resource group, we also have a MidCoff EIS that we will be starting to work on probably later this summer. And that's just essentially a spinoff from MidCoff EA, kind of the same ground, same ideas, just a little better, more intensive look. So I think that's it in a nutshell. We have East Omer restoration, probably that will occur in 2019, and that's from trying to clean up a little bit of logging activity that occurred years ago. And also in 2019 coming up, we'll be working on man-made hole to help some of the flow that's inconsistent out there into the lake and, or into the pond and out. So, Dave?
I'll speak just briefly on our local Wrangell-Petersburg RAC program. We have until September 30th to make recommendations to our forest supervisor on approximately $100,000 that we haven't made recommendations for yet. The committee is without a quorum right now. We did do a new membership package that is be reviewed by the Secretary of Agriculture. At which time that's approved, then that list will come back and we can get a quorum and start that process again, hopefully by the end of the summer. There's two identical bills in the Senate and House that reauthorize the act. That's the Secure Rural Act Title II money. There are two identical bills. I'm not sure where that is. I checked the 1st of May, and there's hopefully, keep your fingers crossed, we can get that money back into the community here and get the rest of our projects going. I think that's just the kind of overview I wanted you folks to have. And if you have any questions, give a call to myself at the Ranger District anytime.
Right, Eric.
Dave, I had a question. I was hoping you could clarify a little bit about the RAC community's quorum. And so if there is no quorum, our community doesn't have an ability to be able to utilize that $100,000. Is that correct?
That's right. The committee package that we sent to Washington, D.C., does have enough people for a quorum. We've had people leave, so we had to submit a new package, and that's what we're waiting on for the Secretary of Agriculture to respond on.
Okay.
So it's kind of going the right way.
Excellent.
It's a little tough with the transition of the right people in the right position to okay that, but keep your fingers crossed on that. Yes.
Thank you.
I know that Kuprinoff was awarded a RAC grant for working on their dock. Are there any other recent RAC grants that you can talk about?
I could talk about all of them if I can remember them all.
a sampling would be okay.
That was $40,000. Mm-hmm. That was approved by our forest supervisor and moved on. I'm thinking you cut me off guard on that one.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Tom, can you think of any RAC? We're brilliant today, aren't we?
Yeah. Have the funds usually been fully expended? The money's available to us.
We've been pretty lucky. And it is a little bit of luck of getting that all spent. Mm-hmm. So things that aren't that particular can be moved on to the next year for a certain period of time. So I think it's $100,000 what we have left.
And that $100,000 covers couple communities, doesn't it?
Not it does. Petersburg. Actually, we have CAKE, Wrangell, and Petersburg. And there was some proposed RAC projects that aren't totally funded yet. Was some redesign and construction of a trail at Cathedral Falls in CAKE. We had, I'm trying to think of some Petersburg stuff here. I'm sorry, I can't, my mind's blank. Good question, however.
All right.
Yes, sir.
So as a continuation of my first question, is the RAC community looking for new members?
There's always the application. We always like to have someone. Mm-hmm. If everything is approved this time, we'll have a full RAC committee.
Okay.
As soon as that comes back down from Washington.
Excellent.
And their terms are at different times, so people will be coming off. That's part of the problem we had this year, is that three or four people had used their term up, so we got some more individuals on it. So we have kind of a standing A team and B team going. So it's always an opportunity to get on the list as people are interested in that program, yes.
And how might people get onto that list? Who should they contact?
Linda Slatt.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you again.
Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is the mayor's report. And the first item is a thank you to Mark Jensen. As most folks know, Mark Jensen resigned as Petersburg's mayor on May 18th. Mark was originally elected to the assembly in 2007, served as vice mayor, and assumed the role of mayor in 2012. On behalf of the assembly, the borough staff, and Petersburg residents, we want to thank Mark for his efforts and commitment to our community. And we also need to appoint a vice mayor. With the resignation of Mr. Jensen, I become the mayor per borough code, and I will appoint a vice mayor with the approval of the assembly, and I think at the conclusion of my notes we can do a vote for that. We are seeking letters of interest. The borough is seeking letters of interest from Petersburg residents willing to serve our community by filling one of the following vacant seats until the October 2017 municipal election. There is one borough assembly seat and one harbor board, hospital board seat. Letters of interest may be addressed to the borough clerk and emailed to dthompson@petersburgak.gov. Mailed to P.O. Box 329, Petersburg, AK 99833, or dropped off at the Borough Administration Office at 12 South Nordic Drive. The Historic Preservation Commission, the Borough is seeking letters of interest for three vacant seats on the Historic Preservation Commission. Seat one is reserved for an archaeologist or an at-large member, and the term of this seat ends 12/31/2017. Seat two is reserved for an assembly member with a term ending 12/31/2019. And seat three is reserved for a planning commissioner with a term ending 12/31/2018. Letters of interest may be submitted to the borough clerk as outlined earlier in this report. And then the appointment of Southeast Conference representative and Alaska Municipal League representative. Mr. Jensen was the assembly representative for Southeast Conference and for Alaska Municipal League. New representatives will need to be appointed. We probably won't do that this meeting, but if there is interest, please do let me know. Municipal building dedication and open house. The borough assembly and staff will dedicate the newly renovated municipal building on July 4th, 2017. A reception will be held immediately following the dedication, and tours of the facility will be given. We also want to give a thank you to Janet Holton. Janet has served on Petersburg's Little Norway Festival Committee for 13 years, 7 years as committee chair. Ms. Holton stepped down as chair after this year's festival. Thank you, Janet, for your time, your efforts, and dedications to all things Norwegian, and congratulations on being the recipient of the 2017 Norwegian American Award. We also want to thank U.S. Coast Guard Lieutenant Commander Peter Vermeer. On June 9th, 2017, at 10 a.m., the U.S. Coast Guard change of command will take place at Sandy Beach, and I will be attending on behalf of the borough. On behalf of Petersburg, we thank the Lieutenant Commander for his service and interest and community engagement. There's a public hearing for proposed LIDs, local improvement districts, for paving on streets Unimac, Vesta, and Pearl F Streets. A public hearing regarding the proposed LIDs for street paving on Unimac, Vesta, and Pearl F Streets in the Severson subdivision will be held Wednesday, June 14th, 2017, at 6 p.m. in the assembly chambers of the municipal building. If an affected property owner opposes the creation of the LID, a written objection must be submitted to the borough clerk at or before the hearing. For more information, Please see the public service announcement attached to this report, and I will read that. And it basically says what we just said, that written objections that will be read aloud at each meeting may be submitted to the clerk prior to the hearing via in-person U.S. Postal Service at P.O. Box 329, Petersburg AK 99833, or can be emailed to dthompson@petersburgak.gov. Questions regarding the hearing may be directed to Carl Hagerman, Public Works Director at 772-4430, Chris Cotta, Assistant Public Works Director at 772-4430, or to Deborah Thompson, Borough Clerk, 772-4425. And President Trump's budget. We are keeping an eye on the movement of the president's budget, which does contain some cuts for programs such as water infrastructure grants. Those have been important to Petersburg in the past. However, we do have one positive note. We heard from our lobbyist in D.C. that the funding for the Army Corps of Engineers Section 107 program does have full funding, and it looks like we will be able to move ahead with our next steps in our dredging projects that we've proposed for our harbor. And then finally, Alaska Municipal League Summer Conference. Mayor Loggett August will attend the AML Summer Conference in Haines, August 16 to 17, 2017. And then we need to appoint a vice mayor. And I am going to hand out slips of paper. And we will do it by a paper vote, if you will. And Bob Lynn has said he would be willing to do it. Nancy's name was mentioned, but I haven't confirmed with you that you would be willing.
Right, I am willing.
Okay, so we have two names under consideration. Go ahead. Are you still waiting? We have one vote for Nancy, one vote for Bob, two votes for Bob, two votes for Nancy, three for Bob, and four for Bob. So by majority, Bob is our next vice mayor. Thank you. But thank you for your willingness to serve, Nancy.
So quick question, is this just until the new election in
October? The new election.
Okay. So 4 months roughly.
That's correct. Okay. There is no manager's report. Oh, you do have an item? Go ahead.
If I may. Actually, I'd like to do is give an update on the building project. Other than some grinding and making sure that our fire alarm system works, everything's going pretty well. We are in that stage of somewhere between the next 2.5 to 3 weeks, the project will be done. We do have punch list items that will continue on for a while. One of the things we did with this project, like many of ours, we hold back money. It's called retainage, just in case. So there's some encouragement for the contractor to finish these punch list items. So we'll be managing that for some time. Things like the banister rails on the stairwell, some downspouts, and some stuff down the PD. So that part of it will be going forward as far as the punch list, but as far as the main part of the project, both phase one and phase two will be done, again, 2 to 3 weeks, give or take. We are still waiting for a quote on doing some work on the audiovisual equipment in this room. Some tweaks, plus the sound is just not quite where we want it to be. If we turn the volume up as high as we want to, it starts squealing a bit and getting a lot of feedback. So we're going to relocate some speakers and do some tweaks to the programming in this room. But we're trying to get a quote from the vendor on that. Just as a reminder for the assembly and the listening public, the assembly originally approved borrowing about up to $1.2 million from Power and Light to fill in the funding on this building. Looks like we'll be able to get away with borrowing less than $400,000. I'm being suitably vague because I don't know if there's anything that's going to happen in the next couple, 3 weeks. But so quite a bit less than what the original budget called for. We've not had to get all the way into the contingency, and that helped quite a bit. And we'll handle all that. We'll bring it back to the assembly. And at that level, we may come back and say it might be best just to go ahead and take it out of the general fund and not have to borrow the money. But that'll be an assembly level decision that we'll bring back to you when that's necessary. So, but I want to be able to answer any questions. Again, apologize for the fire alarm, but I guess it shows the system works pretty well.
Yeah, two questions, Steve. First one, do we have have we had any movement in the foundation now that, after it got repaired, or have we noticed any? And do we have a something in place so we can monitor it?
No movement that I'm aware of. We haven't talked about kind of monitoring it, but I'll ask, some of our folks. So I'll ask the architect if he knows of a way to do that. The key issue has been that we are most worried about was on this far side.
Right.
And when they removed the slab, we found that the structural supports under the walls were all in really good shape. So that was all good news. The dirt material, whatever you want to call it, underneath the slab was of mixed variety. Some places really good, other places a little bit mucky. So we dug some stuff out, backfilled it, and the hope is that will pretty much settle all that down. But again, nothing that was like alarming, which is one of the things we were worried about, is finding out if we had to redig in or put in some kind of retaining wall for the building, and that did not appear to be necessary. So I'll ask around, see if there's any way to monitor it, but no warning signs at this point.
Second question was, if I heard you correctly, then you're going to come back with a plan of how we pay the money back to the electrical fund?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah, at this level, we've got options, so we'll bring them back to the assembly and let you guys talk about it, how you want to do it.
Thank you.
Under budget's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Well under budget.
All right. That moves us up to unfinished business. The first item is Ordinance 1707. An ordinance of the Petersburg Borough adopting the budget for fiscal year July 1st, 2017 through June 30th, 2018 in the third and final reading. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved by Jay Stanton Greger, seconded by Bob Lynn to approve Ordinance 2017-07. Is there any discussion?
Yes, I would like to move that we remove the lineman position for $160,000 in the electrical fund. I think at this point in time that, and hearing from the manager and other things, I don't think we're in a position to be able to fill that and to be able to fully utilize it. Maybe at some time in the future, we need to relook at it. But right now, I don't think it should be in the budget. I think it should be removed.
So if we were to remove it, when would we be able to...
We need a second to discuss it.
Sorry. Let's do that. I'll second that.
All right.
Discussion. If we were to remove it, when would we be able to reinvestigate that if we did find that a second or an additional lineman was necessary?
Okay.
Is there a time frame?
If I may. The assembly can address these things at any point in time. Okay. What it would require would be a supplemental budget. Which does take three readings, a supplemental budget ordinance it does take three readings to pass, but you could start that a month into the budget, or it could happen in midway through the year, or not at all.
Okay. So we have some freedom to adjust.
Any other discussion?
I'd like to talk about the IT guy position there.
I thought we might want to vote first.
Yeah. Are we done discussing? So the motion by Bob Lynn and seconded by Eric Castro is to remove the lineman position from the budget. May I have a roll call vote?
Cindy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
And that is unanimously approved. Okay.
Now I'd like to discuss the IT position. I thought maybe I was going to be out of order there, so thank you for correcting me. And I would like to ask the staff, because they're the ones that are going to have to be dealing with this. Are you satisfied with the service that we're getting now and we just want to add to it? Or would it be better for us to have a part-time local IT person that understands our needs? And I'll wait for staff's recommendation.
I'll eventually weigh in, but I think the group that has to face the biggest part of this is sitting across the back of the room. So, ladies and gentlemen, you want to weigh in on the IT position? What your experiences have been? Wow.
Or not.
Happy.
I will.
Okay. I thought somebody might.
Member Woolhooter, the PCS, our current IT provider, operates remotely from Iowa. Everybody knows that, I believe. And they've done a fantastic job. They really are responsive, and most of the problems that we have in public works can be handled by them getting on remotely after we're out of the office even and sorting things out. So that's been great. I think the numbers that that Jody covered with the amount of support that we've actually required from PCS has been pretty was very eye-opening for me to know exactly how much time we do request of them, and we're way over our quote-unquote budget for time from them. A lot of things probably could be handled in short order by a local, and there are many hardware issues that come up from time to time that would be helpful to have a local person on staff. I don't believe it needs to be a full-time person, and PCS is still very valuable, but the combination of those two things, I think, is valid.
So as Carl said, for Carl?
No.
Okay. As Carl said, we do use a lot of hours with PCS, a lot more than we had thought that we were. We were budgeting about 25 hours a month, when really we use about 60 hours a month. And you have to remember, we have over 13 buildings that have electronics and computers in them. I know that I spend a lot of time working on computer issues. If our front desk goes down, there's no one that I can call. I have to fix it myself with help from PCS. But a lot of times, you know, stuff happens in the afternoon. So they're in Iowa. So that's a three-hour difference. It's hard to get help. I do a lot of crawling under desks and helping my staff with our computers. So I really want to see at least a part-time position. Anyone else?
Excuse me. Just from our end, with our GIS system being on the servers, and we've had some issues where no one really knows what's on one server or not on the server, and they've made changes and locked us out of our software, and it takes a couple of days to chase down what went wrong and why suddenly the police department's mapping software is no longer working. And it was it would be helpful to have someone that kind of had an idea of who's where, who's doing what, and what the pitfalls are of switching passwords and moving things on servers and off servers so that we don't run into those issues again.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, just to add to the story, I thought it'd be beneficial you could hear it directly from some of the folks. PCS does a really good job. I mean, we have the technology installed at this point where they can literally dial in to a desktop, and dial in is not really the right term, but they can access a desktop from Iowa and just take it over, and allows them to fix most desktop issues. As Jody says, though, they're in Iowa and we're in Alaska, and there's a time difference. So we have that issue at times. When we sat down with when PCS came here to help getting the building ready to go and move some of our last steps in moving some of our hardware servers out of the old new fire hall maintenance area into this building, we sat down with them to talk about, what are we looking at? As you heard, if we don't do this, we're going to see our fees go up. They have to cover their costs, and while a lot of it was related to this building, it appears that we are using a lot more maintenance hours than we were paying for. What he really discussed with us was issues related to, servers and the network itself that cannot be done easily from a remote site, and where they can spread hours out, and if we had somebody that was covering those hours on weekends or evenings or flexible, it would make their lives a lot easier, particularly on things like big updates that involve having to touch machines and, rather than having to either wait till their next visit or having to try to do it one machine at a time, having somebody here that they could walk through going into the server room and rebooting a server and redoing updates and pushing that out to all the other desktops and devices. We've become fairly complex. We have, stuff at the library. We have, wireless access points. We have our own fiber line that creates connections between all the buildings. And then we have issues with homegrown software, or not homegrown software, but things like the camera systems that exist and how much network volume they take up. And in from PCS's perspective, having that person that they can call on and over time, basically, as you heard Liz say, educate on what's where. It actually would allow for us to be a little better, better customer, I guess, in a sense, but get this stuff done, not have to wait for it to be done, and make sure this stuff is happening when it should, from a standpoint of the users that are accessing our system. My guess is it's going to get nothing but worse as we go forward. Technology is a part that we have to live with, and it's everything we do these days has to do with some form of the computers, our data security, and how we use them and what the public uses them for. So I think it's needed. My big concern about it all along has been not that we don't need it, it's just that, how do we stop the spread? So in other words, I don't want it to grow. I mean, and I don't know how to necessarily do that right now. It's going to get more and more where technology is a big part of it. And while PCS continues to be able to support us, I think we're always going to be we're getting to that point where we're going to have to answer that question before we implement technology. What's it going to cost? Not just the cost of the technology, but what it's going to cost to maintain it. And we're going to have to, as a group, answer that question more and more frequently before we make decisions to, go to iPads or whatever. We're going to have to be a little bit more pushback, I think, or we're going to see that change.
So I have two questions for you, Steve. When is our contract up with PCS, and are we at a minimum level with them, or could we reconfigure if we decided that a local position gave us a little bit more bang for the buck and we could reduce our PCS hours in the future?
Well, it's kind of unfortunate, it's the opposite. They're going to raise the fees if we don't hire someone. Jody, you'd have to speak to the actual numbers.
Actually, our contract, we do have a contract that's up on the 30th of June, and then they've asked us to go hourly, so we're paying for a bucket of hours now. We're paying 40 hours at a time. So if we were to hire someone, we'd use less of those hours as quickly. But, they asked us to purchased 20, and I'm like, oh, no, we're going to need way more than that. Let's just bump it up to 40.
But that gives us some opportunity to flex back and forth between the two.
Yes.
Go ahead, Eric.
Okay, so based on what you're saying there, Jody, it sounds like there might be an option for a hybrid in between utilizing the PCS contract and having a local technician for hardware replacements or and kind of having that institutional knowledge about this location in specific.
Exactly.
Okay. Is there an ability for us to, instead of hiring an actual part-timer where we might need to pay for, benefit package, could we have an as-needed contract with a local specialist?
Possibly. If someone in town is willing to do that, and I'm not sure how much that would cost per hour.
Kurt, are you have
a question?
Yeah, my concern here is that I've listened to this, and this is all multifaceted from the standpoint of just users. We're looking at security, we're looking at the servers, we're looking at all parts of this. I don't believe that one person half time can do this job. What I think we need to do is have a kind of a timeout and reassess what our total needs are over looking across the board, because what I've heard here is a whole bunch of different ideas of uses we have and needs for. And I'm not arguing that we don't have those needs. What I do think is we need to make a complete assessment before we decide we want a half-time person or we want a multifaceted, two people, for what we want to do. I have no problem with continuing contract, even though it might cost a little bit more. Or as you want to do is hire somebody, as a temporary or contract it for a half a year, until we get some kind of an assessment of what our needs are going. Because I agree with Steve, it's just going to continue to increase in complexity as we all see it. And the programs change so often now that it's really hard to keep up, as we all know.
Well, and if I, one of the things, we have done that assessment. That's why we didn't come up with the part-time person just on a whim. Our challenge is we don't know what it's going to grow. Because we don't know what the next technology thing that's going to come along that's going to be an issue for us. You mentioned data security. It's, not that few days away from where, ransomware was hitting people all over the world. That's a very common thing. You go to, city manager conferences and assembly conferences, and it's one of the topics that's most talked about is, the whole security side of it. So when you hear me say, I'm concerned about the future, that's really more what it's about. It's not that it's like we're going to have to internally really think about stuff, not just, wow, that's really cool and the public would love it and this would make things easier, but what's it going to cost beyond just buying the software? We just went through a process of the tax assessment that was, messy. Let's call it what it was. We're spending overall about $60,000 on an automated system to try to make that less messy. Clearly, how it was being done was not as well as we'd like to do, but there's a cost to fixing it and doing it better. I think you're going to see more and more of that. And I don't think any of us can forecast what that's going to be. I think getting somebody in here and starting to get them knowledgeable about our systems is important. Whether or not down the road something else is going to come up and we're going to be coming back to you again saying, oh, my God, the world has changed on us, I don't want to make false promises. I just can't. There's too many things changing in technology these days. I think it's a good idea to get somebody in here. We're factoring in PCS continuing to be as flexible as they have been with us. They didn't bill us for these extra hours on this stuff. They could have come back and said, hey, you're a violation of your contract. You more than doubled your number of hours. I think they're a really good partner with us, and as long as we can continue to rely on them. But I think they're also recognizing they're in business to make money, and they're looking for the borough to step up a little bit. whether it's higher, much higher fees to them, or whether taking some of this internally. So, but I don't know that I could answer your question, but I don't know that we could come up with what's the future going to look like, just because it changes so fast.
But it seems to me you could do a needs assessment and such that, you know, we know there's at least half a dozen different areas that we want. We also know approximate time frames that we would do. Is it better, going back to something Eric said, is it better to do a combination thereof? Is it better to hire somebody part-time? Is it better to do somebody full-time? What's our best options is what I'm fussing with.
I know this much. We're never going to be able to hire one person here that can do what PCS does for us. I mean, the world in the computer industry has changed where you don't find one person that's an expert on every aspect of the business. So we're always going to need somebody like a PCS, unless we want to create our own IT department, and that's cost prohibitive. So that part we do know, that something like PCS is going to be required, their managed service, going forward, probably for as long as we're around. The question comes down to is the value of somebody, you know, local, and I think that's clear. I mean, we've heard from them, we've heard from the staff, you know, we've seen it where ability to solve problems a little faster due to the time difference. You know, that's a danger is using somebody in Iowa as compared to somebody in our same time zone. But I can tell you, I looked at a firm in Anchorage that does similar to PCS, and they were twice the price of what PCS was charging us. So, you know, yeah, same time zone, but they're, in a sense, almost as far away when it comes to getting here, and we're going to charge us more for the same services we were already getting. So, again, I'm pretty comfortable that the part-time thing would add value to us. I'm less comfortable looking out 2 or 3 years and saying, you know, something else is going to change, or that part I just can't do. I'm not sure anybody could. I mean, we've tried to take steps. We've gone to Office 365, which is a more customizable approach to software use to cut some costs down the road. We've moved a lot of our data to the cloud, so we don't have to worry about having as many servers on board. All of this has been recommended by PCS, and it's stuff that we've tried to take steps to do. But, you know, I say this, and then a year from now, there's a whole new threat in some fashion or new thing, and, you know, we start being asked to change it. So I don't know that I can go beyond, you know, this current time.
Yes, Kurt.
So that pretty much is the reason why I asked about that, is because I just wanted to get it out in the open here. So if we decide to leave it in the budget, it's been suggested we take it out. But if we decide to leave it in the budget, then it's not going to be used specifically to hire a part-time person at this point. Is that correct? Or to look into our options?
Well, that was the plan, was to...
I guess what I would like to do then is make a motion then that we just use that money is to look into our different options instead of specifically hiring a half-time, you know, part-time person then. So would I have to make a motion in that respect? Or is that something that we can just assume?
I'm not sure I understand.
I think I'd need more clarity.
Okay, I guess, well, if we leave this line item in there, then we've just gave them the go-ahead to go ahead and hire a part-time person. Mm-hmm. And what we've been discussing here is the possibility of you know, contracting it or different hours, but we'd still need the funding. Mm-hmm. So why take the funding out if, you know, if we need to leave the funding in, I guess is my thought. How would we change that then?
Okay, if I may. If you wanted to do something like that, then I would suggest that, well, then you'd need to take it out of the budget and make us come back to you with a proposal, you know, for some other, you know, solution. In other words, to be the cleanest, rather than trying to earmark it and say, we'll leave the money in, but we're not sure what you're going to do with it yet. That starts to get a little bit messy.
So my only concern there is our contract is up with PCS.
We're going to need some of that $50,000 to pay PCS. So we're going to need probably about $35,000 of that.
And then if we need an additional, it will take several readings to approve that, so that extends the period of time when they're sitting there trying to respond to a hardware or software issue. And I'm not sure that that's the best approach.
So how would we go about that? Because like I said, if we leave it in here, Steve, then we've basically told you guys to go ahead and hire that part-time person.
Correct.
All right, so then we're going to have to make a motion to take it out of the budget, and then we'll have to figure out how we can continue to fund this program so that there's no lag and there's, you know, in the services.
Well,
is that correct thinking?
We move. What do you think is the number, Jody?
You know, I would just move the entire $50,000 to professional services, and we'd get the message not to hire someone, but we'll probably need some of that money to up PCS's contract and to pay, you know, someone that we contract with in town if they have time.
Yeah. One of the challenges with, I mean, and, you know, for example, we use Devron a lot in this building. He was wonderful helping us with stuff. The challenge is he's got a business to run, and he's a really busy guy. And a lot of our stuff is really important, and we ran up against issues where, you know, he was busy with his other clients and couldn't get to us as fast as some of our folks wanted it done. That's not to say he didn't do good work. He did great work, and he's very capable guy, and PCS loved working with him. But again, he's got other clients rather than just us. That's the advantage of us hiring somebody, is that then they report to us and their priorities are set by us. You're exactly right. I mean, we could go that route, pay PCS more, and whatever's left over, use somebody like Devron when he's available. But it's a little bit harder because of the issue of we can't set the priorities then.
Question, Eric?
Yeah, so if we were to remove this line item, place it into professional services, would you have to come back to the assembly to ask for the additional funds you'll need, Jody, for the 40 hours of time from PCS? Or would you be able would the manager be able to do that?
Yeah, we'd just be able to do
that. As necessary. Okay.
Steve, would it be reasonable to ask for a one-page analysis of all the things we're expecting this individual or look at that? One page, you know, a listing of all the things that have to be done, and taking a look at whether it'd be better to do it internally, by contract, or, you know, using currently. And your point about, you know, keeping up to date on the changes is just phenomenal, you know, because we'd always, the training for any individual we'd have on staff is going to be, you know, pretty significant, a lot different than a lot of other folks.
We do have a list that we put together with PCS. I don't have it here with me. Yes, we could clearly provide that. You know, it's something we used when we had the discussion with PCS to figure out what is it that on this list of things do you, meaning PCS, think somebody local would help, and which things would stay with PCS. So we used that when we met with them to come up with this plan originally.
To me, it'd be good to do something like that so we're all on the same page, so to speak, before we move. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Follow-up question. I know we have one IT guy right now up at the hospital, and he's full-time there, but there was another fellow that had expressed interest in this. He would not be interested in doing contract work, or would he... He digs his heels in and says, if I don't get, you know, part-time and benefits, I'm not interested?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Jody and I did meet with somebody that I believe works for the hospital in some fashion. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to speak for other people. Right. What I thought I heard was he needed some guarantees or, you know, he's got to move on with his life.
Yeah.
Regardless, that's a position that we would have to post because we don't know who's available in the community that could have these skills. So if we hired a part-timer, we would run an ad in the newspaper and recruit and say who's interested. Interestingly enough, at least from PCS's perspective, they really don't needs somebody that's got specific knowledge. What they need is somebody who's technically astute and doesn't mind to learn. I mean, granted, if they've already got knowledge, that's a big thumbs up. But a lot of what they need is the ability to teach someone that is really interested in this and has a base level of knowledge that makes it fast for them to pick stuff up. So, I mean, that was kind of the message I got from the meeting with PCS. We included PCS in the meeting. We met with this local gentleman so they could ask questions just as a way to make sure we were thinking the right thing. And, you know, PCS walked away saying, yeah, not exactly, but the guy knows what he's talking about. He knows about IT and he's got base knowledge. We wouldn't have to be starting with the alphabet. He knows enough to, you know, get him up to speed quick. So I guess that's the challenge with anything IT these days. It's not as, because we're not a big IT shop, it's nothing we do is going to be that specific. It's going to be a laundry list of things, and some of which they may already know how to do, and others which PCS will have to help walk them through.
So is anyone inclined to make a motion, or are we going to stand with the main motion? Hearing none, let's take a roll call vote on Ordinance 2017-07 as amended to remove the lineman position, which we previously voted on.
Nancy?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
And Ordinance 2017-07 is, as amended, is approved.